Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Ice-T. I want you to do something for me. Make sure you download and subscribe Library Rap, the hip-hop interviews with Tim Ioncal. It is official. All right? Stop playing. Download and subscribe Library Rap, the hip-hop interviews with Tim Ioncal. It's cold.
Marcus Martin, Malcolm X. Biggie Pop, Big L forever. Trayvon Martin, Emmett Till. When you black, they shoot to kill. When you black, you live with limits. Life and death is both a sentence. Innocent still doing time. Punishment should fit the crime.
Rex has just released his new album, Things, The Hunger Inside Never Gets Satisfied. Rex, welcome back to the Library Raps, the hip-hop interview with Tim Ioncal. Thank you so much for being here.
Tim, thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure, brother.
So, Things tackles issues from white privilege to being black in America to PTSD to Big Pharma. But what I think is interesting that the table-setting track, that first track off the album, is Strong, Ready, Able, which is about fatherhood and letting your kids know about what your point of view of it and kind of that struggle. And so why is that the opening track of this album when you've already, when you're tackling all these other issues?
So the sound bed was supposed to be laid out and was laid out with the understanding of, the parallels that we face in our everyday life in comparison to the world we live in. And so I wanted to have dialogue that truly delved into what was going on in my personal life and what I really valued, the things that are most important, and then have that placed against the parallel side of the world, whereas we're dealing with things in the world that are like not so important, materialistic of nature, and create all these dynamics for the isms and the different capitalist systems that are set in place because of that. So it was important to start it off with what's going on internally and what's going on personally, to let it be known clear that those are the things that are paramount in my life.
I was there for dirty diapers and Google Gagas. Somewhere I lost survivor tactics, steps backwards, can't raise bastards, present in the Lamaze classes, my mom.
Was that how, just in terms of the writing process, was that kind of how you also wrote the album, with knowing that this track would, Strong, Ready, Able, would be the first track, so this is the first track you're going to tackle?
I kind of have scrambled puzzle pieces that, ideas that come out sporadically, and all these things are just splattered against the wall, and then I kind of arrange things in positions where they belong, which is a fun process in itself. That's basically my logic and my approach when I'm creating.
A lot of things I appreciate about, and we've obviously have done a few interviews prior to this, but a lot, and I appreciate your work, and a big part of the work that I appreciated you doing is not just, you're not just talking about yourself at all time. You're trying to you're using your voice to kind of talk and express what other people might be going through. But you also have this appreciation for the people around you. And when you, on the opening track, the title track, Things, you open it with, thank you.
Thank the heavens for not so production.
Absolutely.
Can you talk about, I think that says a lot. I mean, in terms of how much you respect Knotts as a producer, can you talk about Knotts producing this track, but also what is about Knotts that kind of, that you appreciate the most about him?
Well, what I can say is I can relate to some mannerisms of when you look at Knotts' career and the incredible accomplishments. I would not, put myself in a position to say I kind of mirror his career. But I would say I can relate to the fact that he's such an impactful artist who for some reason or another has a tendency to not be put into the same positions of where his level of capabilities and his accomplishments are. I feel like he's kind of not looked at to the level of his capabilities and artistry. So I super respect him as one of the GOATs in our industry, and someone to be, you know, commended and respected and to be given his flowers, obviously for how incredible of an artist he is.
Do you remember the first track you heard by Knotts that kind of you wish you were there to get, you know, to pretty much get on?
I mean, there's too many Buster records that I can think of, like, and I mean the list is too endless to, like, you know, kind of just, you know, say one thing. What I can say is, like, you know, of all the producers out there that I've worked with, I think my biggest you know, wish is to work on a full kind of length project with someone of his caliber. You know, I've been blessed to do the, you know, full project thing with a lot of artists, and I feel like our styles really work well together.
You start out with you spit I was born with this addiction to ripping mics to cordless. Okay, so can you just quickly take us back to kind of your early days of writing, and not just writing, because my understanding is that you're also a breakdancer as well. I mean, what drew you to breaking, and what also drew you to writing, and then how did writing kind of propel you to this?
Well, you know, coming in again, like, I feel like my life has mirrored and kind of been parallel to hip hop and the environment around me in general, just like the world that we live in. And I've always found a way to, you know, absorb energies off of what was going on in my surroundings and absorb energies from, like, you know, this amazing culture that we're blessed with that has given me so much, you know? So I feel from the beginning, you know, when I first was, like, you know, a wet behind the ears young kid entering into this culture, it was just fun, free, and, you know, just, you know, youthful exuberance, like, just to be involved with what I was seeing in with my family. My family was super in love with this culture, and through that, I found a fondness just because I wanted to be absorbed in what I saw my family engrossed in. So that's really how I first started. But knowing who I am as an individual who is an empathic and is able to feel the vibrations of what's going on, like I said, in my environment, I knew I needed an outlet to speak on the things that I was seeing around me, but also the things that were going on in my household. So it was necessary to, you know, pick up the pen.
You left University of Massachusetts Amherst, and then you left to record at Brick Records, which I think is, you know, anyone, that's such a big move or bold move, just because the understanding about college is that you go to college and then you'll have a career afterwards, right?
Right.
And you need that degree. How'd you know that this was, that one, college was not going to help you or be for you at this time? And that your move to Brick Records was the correct move at the time.
I could feel, like, from the jobs I was doing, like, you know, while I was in high school and things that, like, I wanted to gravitate towards when I was going to college were artistic in nature. And then also I just, I would read so much and be thinking, you know, pre any of my current situations where I'm thinking finance and, you know, generational wealth, like many and so many are right now, you know, pre all of that kind of understanding, I just had an idea, maybe a premonition that, like, you know, me taking the 9-to-5 path wasn't going to, you know, suffice me internally. Like, I knew my stomach was not going to be able to handle that kind of lifestyle. I mean, so many people are successful at it, and it's respectable that people can, you know, grind it out and live their life like in that kind of manner. I just knew I couldn't punch a clock. I knew I couldn't be told, like, you know, this is where you will be at this such and such time. You know, I just knew that wasn't going to be for me. So, like, I did it in my early life, and I did it when I needed to. But, like, you know, my ultimate goal was to, you know, take my creative, you know, capability as far as they could take me.
So much of this album is not just a great display of topics that you're able to spit on or spit about, but it's also, I think, a really good display of the versatility you have in terms of your flow and as an artist. So if I mention, hey, you kind of sound like this guy, it's more just sort of respect of what you were able to do. So I want to ask you about on the record Things. You know, you have this, you mentioned Common, you mentioned Nas, and then I kind of feel like during that point you kind of spit like AZ a little bit.
Okay.
Can you talk about the impact that, I mean, the reasoning for mentioning Common and Nas, and was kind of like a spitting somewhat like a flow like AZ was purposeful, or was that just kind of what took you there?
It really wasn't an intentional thing. It wasn't purposeful. The voice that comes out of me, and the you know, the usage of the words in the manner I use them, has definitely been influenced by great artists who I respect and demand respect and command respect. Excuse me. So definitely Common and AZ and Nas and many, a plethora more, deserve so many flowers just to, like, let it be known how much they've influenced my style and my I do feel I have a unique style, but at the same time you can definitely see, you know, pieces of different artists who have, you know, molded me over the years.
I think one of my favorite tracks on the album is Miseducation, you know, produced by G-Wiz. I simply love the track. I can't say it's incredible. It was just an amazing track to hear you spit on. Can you just tell us the importance of this track and why now, what prompted you to write something like this in 2020?
Well, looking at where my young kings and my young queen are in their lives, and knowing the dialogues that we have consistently about, you know, questioning everything that they learn, and every child and every teenager and every you know, pre-adult and or anyone I speak to, if I'm you know, doing a seminar, if I'm doing, like, you know, some kind of talk or anything of that nature, I always make sure that I let them know to do just that, to question everything, because there's so much misinformation that is out in the world now via the mediums that we use for interactions. But even prior to that, the innate aspect of, like, you know, this educational system, you know, perpetuates that situation. It creates an environment for misinformation and a need to unlearn and relearn in order to, you know, truly successfully navigate this world we live in. Like, you can navigate this world we live in and have the information that you're fed and believe that to be, you know, just the way things are, or you can, like, kind of like look at it from a lens outside of the box that we're all put in by nature and in civilized, quote unquote, civilized society. Excuse me, miss. We don't need
your miseducation. Miss me with the misrepresentation. You know, you not just tackle education and miseducation, but you also tackle topics such as PTSD and Big Pharma, especially in the Black and Brown communities. You do that on the Complex featuring Farrah Munch. Can you talk about why connect these two topics in one song, but also what was it that said to you, hey, I got to bring Farrah on this track to kind of help me hit it home?
Okay, so the first part is, like, you know, the industrial complexes of the world are all just another aspect of, I'm talking about this world this world and system that is created for us based on, like, capitalism and the need to, like, you know, control the masses. And so it was very important for me to talk about this topic specifically now in a time where, you know, people get these conspiracy theories and things of that nature misconstrued a lot of times when, you know, things are just considered conspiracy theory just because, you know, they don't adhere to traditional wisdoms. Mm-hmm. So the notion that that individuals have for Big Pharma and for PTSD can be completely confused based on, you know, misinformation and things that are just out there and that we just accept. And it's important to, like, put a true lens on the industrial complexes because there's so much more to it, especially, obviously, I've spoken, you know, in depth about the prison industrial complex. So, you know, that was one that we were thinking about, you know, adding to the fold. But it was necessary just to touch on these two topics because they're not topics that, you know, are typical topics I touch on. And Farrell made perfect sense because obviously Farrell has made it a point to address, you know, so many topics, you know, related to these kind of struggles in a very unique voice. One of our greatest voices in hip hop, you know, so like he was the first no-brainer who I reached out to make something like this happen. And obviously Static is a long time friend more than anything, but like just an incredible artist who is doing amazing things at the moment. Right, left, right,
left, right, left, right. So two tracks that are that work well hand in hand, I think, and I'm assuming I could be wrong. I think Purposeful, you in terms of how they're laid out on your album is Isis Daughter and Rachel Green. There's two different tracks. I mean, two different tracks, but are two different storylines. You know, Rachel Green's about white privilege, and Isis Daughter is about kind of uplifting and empowering women and stress the importance of love. Why have these two kind of tracks, you know, back to back, and what's the importance of just, you know, of both of these tracks at this time?
It was imperative to have them back to back, and the reason was because, you know, the message to our Black and Brown sisters of the world, I look at the human side before I look at anything, but like, you know, specifically our Black and Brown sisters who are, you know, kind of put to the background and forgotten. And there's a lack of understanding of how incredible their shoulder weight has been throughout history. It was important to first go back specifically because, you know, my spiritual leanings right now lean toward Kemetic teachings, and she taught Neta, which is a belief system, you know, in connection to mysticism, mythology, and spirituality, and ritual. And so I would have called it, you know, I allowed it to be called Isis Daughter, even though, you know, the proper approach to calling Isis would be Aset in Kemetic teaching. But so many people understand Isis and Osiris in our culture. So I put the words there in that manner just for it to be relatable and understandable and all inclusive. But the mind frame behind it was to be approaching a very specific time in my life where my relationship with my queen is so powerful, and I found an individual who I connect to spiritually, mentally, physically. Everything is, you know, where it needs to be. And I see that in so much of so many of our people who those kind of relationships are like overshadowed by so much negativity. And so I wanted to put that to the forefront. And then also, you know, in following up with that kind of understanding, I wanted to make it clear that, especially in the time now, but like not specifically, you know, directed at 2020, because all my dialogues are directed at, you know, centuries of abuse and neglect. Right. So the topic of white privilege needs to be in the forefront and brought to task, taken to task, like for its abuse of not just Black and Brown individuals, but its abuse of, you know, our white brothers and sisters who have in their head a preconceived idea of how the world truly works that is like truly wrong. You know, it's just right. truly confused. And that's misinformation and that's abuse towards them as well. So I needed to approach it in a unique way. And, you know, I'm a big fan of Friends, you know, like I am, you know, like it's odd because, you know, like I know Friends is, you know, completely taken from, you know, Living Single and the concept right. of Living Single and right. what occurred. You know, but I mean, I take the art of what Friends is. I can take it for what it is, and I can look at it, and it's totally engrossed and enveloped in white privilege and in a magical, mystical world of, like, you know, something so far from reality, but not so far from reality yeah. at the same time. So it was important to talk about it in that manner.
Are you ever, I only asked this because I remember a few months back I had an interview with Superstition, and he talked about, you know, doing a track that was about, I think it was about police brutality and really exposing kind of the racial dynamic in that sense. And it's one of his favorite tracks. And then he went to present it at a show, and his fans, the white fans, were like kind of aghast by it and didn't want to hear it. Is there ever that worry still to do that, to like maybe worry about that you're isolating your fans in a way? Because I mean, obviously even sons and daughters of racist people, or even they like hip hop music as well, you know, but when it comes to when you're actually showing them, you know, showing racial issues in the mirror to them, they don't want to deal with it.
I'm never concerned about that. Like I have an obligation first to, like, you know, express in my truest voice the things that I see in the environment and things that I go through and things that, like, I know other individuals like me go through. So my objective is not to be concerned about somebody's feeling of hurt, guilt, you know, opposition to what my voice is speaking in. Like, you know, either they at some point in their life may come around to it. People get there when they get there, or they may never get to it, and it may never impact them the way it impacts me or impacts individuals around me. And when I say that, I mean individuals of all shades. And all and individuals of all types. And, you know, for me, my objective is not to be concerned about, like, you know, when I look into the crowd, I'm not so concerned about, you know, the fact that I'm in Europe and I'm in a Polish location somewhere in, you know, some small village. And everybody looking at me does not look exactly like me. My objective is to impact them emotionally. And if they can get impacted by that emotion, that's incredible. And if they can't, they can't. And that goes for any location I'm at. We're not always going to relate with each other, but we can listen to each other and we can learn from each other. And if I impact 20 people and 80 of the other individuals, you know, have hatred in their heart towards what I'm saying, I'm really not concerned about that. My objective is to approach and affect those 20 who actually can be affected.
The beats and the music that you choose on this album obviously fits your voice and subject matter very well. So I have to ask you about, talk to me about the importance of that horn in Legacy Driven. It's such a, you know, such a beautiful horn, and it plays throughout the track.
It was everything. And, like, you know, it was just a moment. Like that song was the only song actually written amid like the true understanding of what was going on with the pandemic. And it was an exhale moment, you know, in the midst of time where we were still inhaling. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just like it was just a moment to, like, look, you know, like, this has to come out, this has to be expressed. But, like, you know, I love the stripped down nature of the production, the limited and very powerful moving mannerisms of the sound bed without a need to just add anything else. Amidst all that chaos, it brought, like, when I say chaos, amidst all the chaos juxtaposed against what's going on in the world, in our environment around us, it was the perfect sound bed. You know, it was like a smooth, serene, peaceful, but at the same time, it was hitting so properly. And that kind of like made it easy to write itself, you know, to get that point across. And I mean, I'm so thankful for Evidence and what he brings to the game. And so thankful that, you know, he values me as an artist, and we're able to like work together in a mannerism that's like, you know, seamless. Say this with a glass of wine and three shots. We all got our vices. We build the
pyramids. Don't care who the nice is. Yeah, that's the thing about it. I mean, the thing about Evidence is a lot of people don't remember how such a good of a producer he is, as well.
Because he's such a dope like, not,
yeah. Right, exactly. In 2011, when you released Rex, you know, Rhythmatic Eternal King Supreme, I think the, you know, you read articles about it, interviews, I think, and the common statement is that we've kind of, as fans and as people who appreciate music, we noticed that there was this change in your writing, that, you know, your tracks on the album became, I guess, fuller in terms of structure and stories. And you've continued that development in your writing with Things as well, which kind of highlights that as well. Where do you see yourself in terms of your goals as a songwriter? I mean, do you think this is like Things has helped you reach that goal, or are you kind of still trying to develop into another level of that art?
I don't think I'll ever stop attempting to, you know, grow as a writer and to develop new approaches to my writing and to implement and add new pieces. Or be daring and try new things. I feel the growth has been visible throughout my career. You know, very early on, like, you know, I was more approached. Like I always had something to say in my music, but I was more, you know, kind of battle driven and braggadocious and like, you know. In my youthful mannerism, you know, it was like it was the signs of the times, and it was more so, you know, where my mind frame was. I wasn't so focused in every record on being topical and having, you know, meaning behind every word. My goal now is to make sure that, like, you know, I don't waste a word, and that drives me, and that creates a need to, like, you know, improve my reading, to improve my studies, you know, focus on my breathing and my meditation and doing my ma'ach, and all these things are things that help not only the, you know, the physical, but the mental and, you know, the spiritual aspects. You know, they tie in together and they create opportunity for me to grow.
Rex, I've asked you about the first track of the album, so I want to end this with asking you about the last track of the album, Still Dreaming. It's this hopeful track that, even though it reminisces about kind of when things back in the day, when things seemed a little easier, because as we grow up, we become adults and we have to do adult shit. but it's also such this hopeful track that you leave us with. Why leave us with this final track? I mean, how did this track come together for you?
Because obviously, so much, you know, about the environment we're in tells us, you know, maybe not so hopeful things, or you know, amidst the chaos, there's fear, and amidst everything around us, the, you know, make America great and great again, my idea of things, you know, like there's so many things that are like put in our face and make us look at the world the way a cynic would, you know. I wanted to, you know, remember, like, you know, what got me here and what's got us here and how we can, like, you know, move forward. I'm always going to hold dear to hip hop, because hip hop, you know, as corny as it is, and how it's always said, is it saved my life. It honestly did. You know what I'm saying? And I know it's done that for a lot of individuals. And, you know, being a kid from Lawrence, Massachusetts, who, like, nobody knows about Lawrence in the scheme of things. And the things that I've seen, the places I've been, the people I've interacted with, and the wonderful souls that I have impacted my life, all have had some kind of connection through this culture that I love, that we love. And moving forward, I feel, you know, the culture is fine no matter where we go with it. There's so much that can be said. There's so much hope moving forward, though.
The latest album is Things, The Hunger Inside Never Gets Satisfied. The incredible album, the artist is the incredible. His name is Rex. Everyone, always a pleasure to have you on the Library Raps, the Hip Hop Interview with Tim Lineko. Rex, thank you so much for doing this again.
Tim, thank you so much. Always a pleasure, brother, and I appreciate you for taking the time with me. Let me know if you ever need anything, brother. Created lines for the J's and the upgraded eyes. Please be wise. The quest for things never dies. The hunger inside never gets satisfied. No wonder men lie under earth for the sky. Let me realize it's just a roll of the dice. This trapper is gentrified. The people so polarized. Blindfold was over.